have some faith. The human body was created with innate wisdom, with innate intelligence. Your body will not do anything to reduce your chance of survival. In fact, everything it's doing is trying to increase your chance of survival. Trust your body and have some faith. And that should give you some peace of mind as well.
Welcome to the Rebel Health Coach Podcast with Tom Underwood. Armed with truth and knowledge, your journey to a healthy lifestyle can be obtained. Preventative wellness, quality nourishment, and daily fitness routines dramatically improve your outlook on life as a whole. And you'll find the support and info you need to accomplish a healthier lifestyle here. Together, we can empower each other along our journey to an amazing you.
Well, hello and happy October to you all. I talk about stress a lot on my show for good reason. Although there are different types of stress and some are even positive, the type we need to pay attention to is chronic stress. And I know this all too well. This is a stress that makes it hard to sleep well, makes it nearly impossible to lose weight, and finds us fighting one cold after another. It's a stress that can cause both medical conditions and trigger and exacerbate flare-ups from existing conditions. This kind of stress depresses the immune system, alters our moods, and damages our professional and personal relationships. Stress is a factor in 5 out of the 6 leading causes of death. I know you've heard that before from me. And an estimated 75 to 90% of all doctor's visits are stress-related issues. Now, in saying that, today's interview with Dr. Amir Rashidian, who is the founder of the Mid-Atlantic Chiropractic Center, where the focus is improving the health of people through drugless solutions. He recently published an amazing book, and I highly recommend you grab it. There will be a link in the bio, The Stress-Proof Life, which documented the real-life stories of his most memorable patients while showing the readers the secret to becoming the kind of person who is able to handle any amount of stress on that journey towards greatness. Dr. Amir is also a doctor of chiropractic. He also holds a Bachelor of Science degree in chemistry and in human biology. I hope you enjoy this episode because it's amazing on so many levels. I enjoyed interviewing him very much, and I hope you enjoy it as well. And remember, create a great day. Dr. Amir, I've been trying very hard to coordinate this episode with James for some time now. And you've been on my... Actually, we started talking back in April. I started talking back with James in April, and we finally here. Welcome to the Rebel Health Coach Podcast, sir.
Thank you so much. Thanks. I'm so glad we got it worked out, and I'm so glad to be here. I've been a fan of yours, and now I get to talk to you, so it's an honor to be on this.
Well, thank you for being a fan, sir.
Absolutely.
I am. It's an honor for me and a blessing to have you on today. And I recently, I got this book and I started reading it. And then recently, I took a road trip, and I finalized it during the road trip. And this is one of the most amazing books on stress I've read in a while.
Thank you.
And it's got some really cool stories in it. And before we dig into this book, how did you get into this field and why did you pick stress for a topic of your book?
Yeah, so I was 9 years old when I decided I had to become a doctor. And the reason for that was because my dad and I were traveling through these remote villages in Iran in the mountains. And this one village, a woman went into labor and she was in tremendous amount of pain. And no one knew how to help her until a midwife walked over. And this midwife knelt down and examined her and listened to her with her stethoscope. And then she stood up all of a sudden and said, "I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do." there's no heartbeat. The baby's not alive. And this lady's not going to make it. And she actually left. And one by one, people who had gathered around start to leave. And I was looking into the eyes of this young woman who was just told she's not going to live another few hours. And I started to have a panic attack. And I'm watching her husband just collapse in tears. And I'm having trouble catching my breath, not believing exactly what I'm seeing, not realizing the full gravity of it, but knowing that this is something that shouldn't be happening. And I felt so tremendously helpless. My dad saw me in tears and he picked me up. He held me, he carried me out of there. And then the two of us climbed down the mountain. We got in our car to drive home. And on the drive home, I said, "Dad, I don't want to feel like that ever again." And he said, "Like what? You know, helpless. Like there's nothing I can do." He said, "What are you going to do about it?" And it made me think. And I decided I would become a surgeon. I'd grow up to be the best surgeon in the whole world and carry my medical bag with me everywhere I go. And I just wanted to save lives. And 10 years passed. I was a student at George Washington University. And I was getting ready to apply for the early selection program so I could start medical school earlier. And I went home for Christmas break. And when I went home, I noticed my dad had this big, thick, white neck brace on. And he was limp and numb from his shoulders down. It was so bad, he couldn't lift his arms to give me a hug. And I could tell he's under the influence of some heavy painkillers. And so we ended up spending my Christmas break, 7 weeks or so, going from doctor to doctor, trying to figure out what's wrong with Dad. And every doctor we went to said, "Well, this is way beyond my scope. You're going to have to go to this other doctor." And finally, we ended up in a neurosurgeon's office. The neurosurgeon took a look at Dad and looked at his MRIs and said, "You need a surgery yesterday. We're going to have to cut you open in the back of the neck and break and remove the bones in your spine. And then we're going to put these plates in and with screws, we're going to screw up and fuse your whole neck. And you'll never turn your head again. You may not regain function of your hands, but we're hoping you have less pain. But there's a good chance you're going to die because you're old." And you know, Dad was 70 years old at that time. And it really doesn't matter because there's such a thing as a young 70 and an old 70. There's plenty of 70-year-olds who are young and vibrant. My dad wasn't one of them. And so we decided to get a second and a third opinion. And all three neurosurgeons said the exact same thing. "We're going to fuse your neck and this is a risky operation." So we got in a taxi to go home after the third neurosurgeon. He said, "Go get your affairs in order, come back and we'll operate." And I was sitting in the back of the taxi. I was carrying all of Dad's x-rays and MRIs and CTs and medical records. And, you know, nowadays they come on one CD, pretty simple to carry. Right. It was a heavy stack of stuff. This is 26 years ago. And so I looked over at my dad sitting in the taxi next to me, and he was cringing because every bump that taxi hit was sending a lightning bolt of pain through his entire body. Looking in his eyes, I could tell he was about to give up. I could tell he just wished he was dead. And I got all choked up all over again. I got transported emotionally back to that village where I saw the woman slowly die in her husband's arms. And I started to have the same helplessness feeling that I had back then. And I'm getting choked up and tears are starting to fill my eyes. And this taxi driver looked at us in his rearview mirror as he was driving. And he said, "Sir, I noticed you're in a lot of pain. And I know you asked me to take you home, but there's a chiropractor right down the street. I don't know what he does, but I've heard he helps people like you. Would you rather me take you there?" I believed firmly with all my heart that all healing only comes from drugs and surgery. So I said no. But my dad was wiser and smarter, and he didn't want to have the surgery. So he said, "If there's any chance, I'd rather try it." So we went to this chiropractor's office, and the rest is history. No drugs, no surgery. The guy worked on my dad for about 6 months, and Dad got function of his arms back. And he was able to do things again and go back to work. And, you know, my dad lived another 18 years. He lived to be 88, and at 88, he was younger than when he was 70 years old. He'd wake up and work out, lift weights, go exercise, visit his friends. They're all in nursing homes, but not my dad. He was living his life, enjoying it. Dad lived long enough to stand right next to me as my best man when I got married. And he lived long enough to meet my first son when he was born. And what it made me want to do is to be able to help people without drugs and surgery, to be able to maybe even prevent kind of what you do, you know, to coach them into the life that's meant for them so they can really enjoy it. You know, wellness is experiencing vitality in every dimension of life. Who else does that? Drugs can't do that for you, and neither can surgery. I'm not saying I'm against it, but it should be a last resort. And so I decided to become a chiropractor, and the rest is history. Now, you asked why it made me go into stress and write the Stressproof Life. I called it stressproof because you think of the bulletproof vest. You know, our police officers wear that vest, and bullets still hit them, and it still might hurt, but it doesn't kill them. So I believe if we put that bulletproof, that stressproof vest on, then stress isn't going to knock you down and keep you down. It's not going to make you sick. You'll still feel it, but you'll be resilient to it. It's about adaptation. So many of my patients would say, "Doc, if I didn't have stress, I wouldn't have any problems. And stress is the source of all my problems." But I wanted to tell them, listen, without stress, you can't get stronger. You can't get more resilient. You can't get healthier. And so I thought, instead of just preaching and lecturing at everybody about stress, I would just write it all down and start handing out the book and see if that helps anyone.
Oh, man. I tell you what, you know, that's a great story, first of all, for you becoming a chiropractor. And amazing story. And I am glad your dad decided to go that route because, you know, and that's something that, you know, I preach a lot. It's like, you know, medication and surgeries are triage. And there's other ways. And I'm just so glad you found this path of chiropractic medicine. And stress is one of the leading causes of death, of six of the leading causes of death. And 75 to 80, 90% of doctors' visits are due to stress. And I'm a stress monger myself. Stress is good to some extent. But, you know, if you're always in that fight or flight mode, it can be dangerous and a tricky curve to death. So I this book, like I said, I read a lot of books about stress. I picked this book up and I was like, wow, this is some great stories. One thing I loved about your book is that I'm a freaking quote junkie. I dig on quotes. And very first chapter, look deep into nature and then you will understand everything better. Albert Einstein. That's so true. Take a walk in the woods. Just walk out in nature and you're going to see everything better.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
And you realize there are no straight lines in the world.
Right. Exactly. And I am one that I ground myself every morning. So I walk out the door with my slippers on, regardless if it's raining or if there's snow. I stand on this little piece of grass. I take my slippers off and I stand there for 15 minutes. And I just absorb nature before I start my day. And my neighbors, for the first 6 months, this one neighbor just sat and watched me. And like, what is that guy doing? One day he walks out and says, "All right, I got to ask. You've lived here for 6 months. Every morning I see you get up, walk out here in your pajama bottoms and your shirt and your slippers, take off your slippers and stand on this piece of grass. What are you doing?" And I said, "I am grounding myself with magnetic fields and forces in the earth. And I'm starting my day with a little bit of nature before I go crazy." And that's it, man. So
That's brilliant. You know, here's the thing. Something a lot of people don't understand, realize, but you do, is that your feet also absorb minerals. So not only are you grounding, you're clearing the negative charges and so on in the body, ionizing properly, but you're also absorbing minerals from the earth, which is important. So many people say, you know, I sleep a lot better when I'm at the beach. One of the reasons they sleep better when they're at the beach is because they just walk barefoot on the sand. They don't walk barefoot anywhere else.
Exactly.
Walking barefoot on dirt, on grass, on sand, whatever, on soil, you absorb the minerals your body needs to be able to rest and repair properly at night.
You're right. So let's dig in. What is stress in your eyes? What is the definition of stress?
Stress is a force that causes change in your life. And so by that definition, and I know there's many definitions, you know, most people, the minute you say stress, they think psychologically stress. Oh, I'm so nervous, or I'm so worried, or I'm so scared, or so-and-so is driving me crazy. That's the kind of stress they're thinking about. I'm so stressed out. I have a test coming up, or I have a deadline at work. But stress comes in three separate dimensions. And some people say there's four dimensions, you know, and I'm open to that. But one of those dimensions is the psychological dimension. But then the other one is physical dimension. And the third one would be biochemical dimension, all the toxicity and the radiation that's surrounding us. So we have to approach it three-dimensionally. By that definition that it's a force, I compare it to things like gravity. Gravity is a force. Are you ever going to say gravity is a bad thing? Well, you would if it made you fall and injure yourself. But you're happy that it keeps your house on the ground, keeps your car on the road. So it's neutral. It's how you use it. And same with fire. It can burn your hand or it can cook your food. And money. Money can potentially fund really terrible terrorist activity. And you go, oh, money is evil. But then money can put your children through college and provide for your family. And then you'd say money is good. It's neither. It's really just a neutral force that can be used to cause change. That change is the result of your body adapting to that stress. So there's a force, then there's a response by your body, which is the adaptive process. And like you mentioned brilliantly, that the fight or flight syndrome is the response to that stress. Now, by itself, it's not a bad thing because it's keeping you alive. It's helping you work through that stress. But if you stay in that fight or flight without ever shifting over to rest and repair, you're just going to break down. That's the person that's burning the candle at both ends. Eventually, they're going to just succumb to that stress in a bad way. The pressure is going to be too much for them.
That's awesome. So chapter two, this is an interesting, this is another, plus Dr. Bruce Lipton's one of my favorite authors.
Good.
The Biology of Belief is an amazing book. And he talks a lot about, have you read his book, The Biology of Belief? Yeah, it's
multiple
great
times.
Yeah. Yes. And the quote that you used in chapter two is, it's a single cell's awareness of the environment, it's not its genes, that sets into motion the mechanisms of life. And in this chapter, you dig into genetics and God made our bodies very uniquely. And given the right environment, our bodies can repair itself from almost any disease. We just have to set that environment in motion inside of our bodies.
Yeah.
So, and I really love the science of epigenetics. And a lot of people, you know, I hear it a lot on my end, you know, well, it's in my genes. Yeah, it is in your genes ultimately, but you don't have to turn those genes on.
That's right.
So let's dive into this a little bit for the listeners from your aspect of this and the books about stress.
Please. Yeah, you know, I worked at the National Institutes of Health for a couple of years while I was still a student, and in between undergrad and grad school, I did a year of work there in the pathology department and research. And I saw how research is done and how a lot of things are tested and examined and so on. And one of the things I realized is to study a certain disease, you need to cause that disease. So here's how cancer research is done. You first off, you take these rats, these mice, and you inbreed them because you want them all to be genetically the same, right? So to help you with your research. But right off the bat, inbreeding is that, what are we doing? We're interfering with nature just to begin with. But let's say that aside, that you've got a group of mice that all have the same genetic material. And then you go, okay, now we need to give them cancer. So how do we give them cancer? They radiate them. They give them toxins. They put them in toxic environments. And in some cases, they actually inject cancer cells into their bodies. Then they start to study their genetics. They go, okay, genetically, they responded this way. And so if we turn off those genes that cause the cancer, then we can give them as much toxin as we want and they won't get cancer. And I go, wait a minute, you know, if you hadn't inbred them, radiated them, toxified their environment, and injected cancer cells into their body, they would have never got the cancer in the first place, regardless of what their genes were. So studying the genes sometimes is so counterproductive, where you go, why don't you just clean up their environment? And there's plenty of research that says when they three-dimensionally cleared their environment, meaning not just gave them the right foods, but allowed them to interact with each other and socialize and allowed them to exercise. So exercise, socialize, and eat good foods, all of a sudden they were able to overcome the cancer and their bodies healed better than humans do. And what happens when a lot of humans get cancer? One of the first thing that happens is they call their family and friends. And all of a sudden people fly in from all around the country, their friends and family, and they spend time with them. They show them love and affection, right? And then they start to hopefully take better care of themselves. And those that do this three-dimensional approach have a much higher probability of recovering from that cancer, no matter how bad it is. You look up any cancer you can think of. Some say the deadliest cancer is pancreatic cancer. But you'll find somebody who recovered from it fully, went into remission and never had any problems with it again. So why is that? I'll give you a quote from a Dr. Fred Barge. He was an old-time chiropractor from many years ago. He said, there are no incurable diseases, only incurable people.
Wow. That's a good one. I really like that one. I'm going to have to write that one down. Yeah, it's interesting because I've known, honestly, physically know people that have been diagnosed with stage 3 and 4 and opted out of all the treatments, the chemotherapies, the radiation, and what have you, and just decided to, one of them really went extreme, but both of them did the same thing. They made their body more alkaline, A. Mm-hmm. B, they stopped eating certain foods to do that. But along the way, they did a lot of vegetables and a lot of farm vegetables, not farm-to-table vegetables, not grocery store vegetables.
Right.
And the reason being is because, and I've said this before in episodes, that the stuff at the grocery store is not getting the minerals that our body needs to reverse the disease, because the food that is grown or the soil that's grown is depleted of the nutrients that we need.
Yeah. Not only that, they get harvested too early.
Right.
They're not ripe.
Right.
Because if they were ripe, they would rot in transit.
Right.
They'd never make it survive the truck shipment from where they were picked to the grocery store. So they have to pick them before they're ripe and ready and let them ripen on the shelf. There's no
sunlight
when they're on the shelf
at the
grocery store.
You're right. So I love this. I love this chapter a lot. And, you know, it's true. I mean, if we surround ourselves, like you said, with friends who support you and people who support you, period. I mean, if negative friendships are unhealthy.
Right.
People that cause you, that's a stress. That's something that causes stress is constant battle with somebody. And they just need to eliminate them. It's sad to say. Yeah. It's sad to say you have to say goodbye to somebody, but at the same time, that energy could kill you.
100%. You know, when my dad was sick and suffering and going through all those problems, he wasn't the only one who suffered. I suffered too. My mother suffered too. People who cared about him, loved him, suffered too, you know? So one of the things your patients and my patients need to realize is you're not doing it for yourself. When you focus on taking care of your health, you're doing it for all the people who love you and care about you because they deserve your very best. Never think the act of taking care of me is a selfish thing. It's actually the most selfless, and I won't say the most, but one of the most selfless things you could do. Because not only are you being your best so you can serve family and friends better, but you're also setting the example and being the role model so they'll follow your example. They'll say, I want to be like you, Tom. I want to do what you do. How do I do that? Now you have that credibility to show them and teach them.
Right, right, exactly. And, you know, and that's where boundaries come into play. Mm-hmm. You know, setting a boundary with somebody and saying, no, that's not what you're doing to me is not acceptable. And I'm going to draw a line here.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. My sleep, my health, my other relationships are much more important. So I'm going to have to make that sacrifice.
Yeah. And I feel myself going down that rabbit hole a lot some days. You know, it's like, okay, I'm starting to be that negative person. I need to take a step back and regroup. And whether that be a retreat, whether that be a trip somewhere, or just a walk to the mountains, or a walk down the street, or some days I just go rent a paddleboard and go on the Chattahoochee River here in Atlanta, you know, by myself, you know. And sometimes you have to do that. So,
exactly.
And
you know, just to clarify the whole genetics thing, you know, there's genetic programming in our bodies right now that aren't running. Like there's a gene for hangovers. You know, they covered the gene. And it's, so, but you're not hungover and neither am I. But we both are genetically predisposed to hangover. So why aren't we hungover? We have the gene for it. Well, because we didn't put toxins in our body the night before. We didn't drink all night. So that's why we're not hungover. There's a genetic program for vomiting. There's a genetic program for a runny nose. There's a genetic program for coughing. There's genetic programming for everything that happens in our body. But those programs aren't always running. You have programs on your computer, on your phone. Unless you tap the icon and start it, it's not going to run. Just don't tap the bad apps in your body.
Right.
Only tap the good ones.
Oh.
Don't have to worry about it.
I love that one. That's brilliant. I love that. I love that. Yeah, don't turn it on. There's my coffee, Gene. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Rebel Health Coach Podcast. Wow, the year is coming to an end fast. Got some general housekeeping today. If you would like to sign up for my newsletter, and if you would like to get general information from me via email, up-to-date things like what to do about this and what to do about that, and some podcast episode releases, text REBEL to 66866. Again, text REBEL to 66866. Next up, I would like to let you know that I have some spots available starting now. I've got a couple seats available for the end of the year. And then I've got 4 spots open at the beginning of 2020. If you would like to do that, or if you're not sure, you can schedule a free consultation with me by going to my website, www.thomunderwood.net. Again, www.thomunderwood.net. Schedule a free 20-minute consultation with me to see A, if we're a good fit, and B, if I can help you. If you feel like shit and you want to lose some weight, or you just feel generally thuggish, not sleeping well, need some help with your gut, please go to www.tomunderwood.net and sign up for a free 20-minute consultation with me, and we'll discuss you and see what I can do for you. And if you don't feel we're a good fit, that's okay also. I appreciate you listening to today's episode. Please rate and review the show and share this episode with a friend. Thank you so much, and much love to you all. You know, I talked about loving this book a lot, and I really want to dig into the Simple 7, but I want to pick your brain a minute about the beauty of the brain and the nervous system. And again, it's a great quote in this chapter, and it's from Sherlock Holmes, which I really loved. I am a brain, Watson. The rest of me is a mere appendix. So let's talk about the brain and stress and the gut and stress, because both of these two go hand in hand, as does the brain and the gut.
We talked about how genes are on the inside.
Right.
And then the environment is on the outside. There has to be a communication system, an interface between the outside and the inside. That's what the nervous system is. Because your senses, we have all the senses of sight, sound, and taste, and smell, and touch, and you know, you name it, joint position. All those senses are bringing data, bringing information into our body, right? The brain will process that information and then respond. So for example, you're driving and a deer jumps out in front of your car, but your eyes have no idea. That's a bad thing, good thing. The eyes just tell the brain, this is what I'm seeing. The brain instantly will say, we need to tell the foot to push the brake. and the foot will shift from the gas pedal to the brake, and I'll slam it as hard as you can. The car will come to a stop, and it'll save your life and the deer's life as well. So the nervous system. So now there's programming inside of us. Some of those programs are built in there. They're wired as the brain starts to, you know, Joe Dispenza says, nerves that fire together, wire together, you know? So programming that repeats over and over and over. That's why we need to practice driving so many times before we get our license and get allowed to go out on the road on our own, is because we need to have experienced certain things and done it so many times so they become programming. Just like our genetic programming, your brain has programs as well, and has programs to respond to different things in different ways. And if you've been programmed to, you know, sit in a corner and suck your thumb and cry every time something goes wrong, well, then that's your tendency. Obviously, you're going to have to rewire those nerves. And if you have a programming to say every time you're challenged by something, you face that challenge, you stand up and you go at it instead of run from it. Well, that's a different programming. You can develop those programs. But the nervous system will take your environment, check with your genetics, turn on certain programs that respond to that environment. So you breathe some pepper and your brain says, we need to get that out because it's irritating the nasal mucosa. And then it turns on the program called sneeze. You'll sneeze and you'll get it all out. Sometimes you need two or three of those sneezes to get it all out. So the nervous system is that interface between the outside and the inside.
Right. And that's good. The gut and the brain connection is so powerful.
Absolutely.
And I always got a kick out of, and before I went into this field, it was like, you know, you always heard about gut, butterflies in your gut or gut feeling. Those are real things. The central nervous system is an amazing creature. Our bodies are amazing creatures. God, in his infinite wisdom, just made this perfect body. A, will heal itself. And B, it knows what's, you know, how to deal with situations. It's
right.
So, yeah, I don't want to dig too deep into this book because it's in my opinion, this is a must get for everybody. And like I said, I read a lot of books about stress because stress is tough and it's tough on everybody. It's been tough in my life, you know? So let's dig into the simple seven and how we fix this. So if you could go break this down for us in you know, in the simple seven, what do we got to do to fix this stress response system that we have?
Absolutely. Well, you know, one thing is we have to realize the reason drugs even work in our body is because, like you said, the body was created with certain receptors. So the reason opioids work to numb us towards pain is because we have opioid receptors in our body. We have cannabinoid receptors in our body. That's why CBD oil works. That's why marijuana works. You know, we have all these receptors. You go, why were those receptors put in the body before the opioid drug was even invented, was even created? Why did we didn't evolve into that? You take Neanderthal man and they have the same receptors. Well, it's because your brain is capable of producing those same chemicals. So you go watch a comedy movie with the love of your life and you hold hands and you enjoy that movie, you laugh together, you're going to release endorphins and enkephalins in your body. And every time you laugh, interleukins float through your body and go kill cancer cells. You just gave yourself $100,000 worth of anti-cancer medicine just by sitting in that environment and laughing. So really dealing with stress is simple, but complicated. Simple in that you don't have to do a whole lot of crazy stuff. You just got to make sure you put yourself in environments that turn on the right programs. So, you know, you mentioned the fight or flight response. What is that fight or flight response? Fight or flight response is pupils dilating, heart rate going up, blood pressure going up, right? Cortisol being released, adrenaline being released, and two systems shut down when you're in fight or flight. It's your immune system and your digestive system. That's why athletes before the big race, they go in the corner and throw up. Because their digestive system goes, I'm so nervous and stressed. I want to put all my attention on muscles because we got to run this race. We got to play this game. We need our muscles. The other thing that shuts down or slows down is the neocortex. You're not able to think very clearly when you're in fight or flight. Your primitive brains work. That's why they call it fight or flight. You go, okay, I either have to fight or I have to run away. there are better and there are other options, but you can't think of those. It's like the person who's about to walk into a classroom and take a test. And let's say this test determines the rest of their life. This test determines whether they graduate from college or if they fail and have to repeat a semester or whatever it might be. It's a high stress situation. They stayed all night studying. They know it all. They understand it. They learned it. They're going to ace this test. But because they're so nervous, they're kind of in that fight or flight, but they still remember everything they studied until they're about to step into the classroom and their toe catches the door jamb and they trip. They don't fall, but they just do one of these things where they trip and they catch themselves. That's enough of a fight or flight response increase to make the neocortex shut down. All of a sudden, that's the person who goes, I just forgot everything I studied. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to recall. And unless they calm back down, they can't do it. One of the biggest, most powerful tools, one of the simple seven, is breathing. You see, the body has rhythms, right? You have your circadian rhythm, your heart rhythm, your breathing rhythm, your circulatory rhythm, your hormonal rhythms. Everything's a rhythm. Well, the breathing one is the easiest one to control consciously. And so let me ask you this. When, let's say you're that student that's walking into the classroom and you trip and you're about to fall. As you're about to fall, do you breathe a sigh of relief where you exhale slowly, or do you gasp for air?
A gasp.
Exactly. Yep. Big gasp. That's fight or flight. Now, people who are in fight or flight long term, we call that sympathetic overdrive. They're stuck in that pattern. Their breathing rhythm is a 1-to-1 ratio, meaning if it takes 1 second to inhale, it takes them 1 second to exhale. That is one of the things that signify fight or flight. If you're in a state where you're not in fight or flight, you're actually doing well. You're in balance between fight or flight, sympathetic, parasympathetic, or in balance. Your inhale and exhale should be a 1-to-2 ratio, meaning if it took you a second to inhale, it should normally take you 2 seconds to exhale. If you look at people who are sleeping, usually their exhale is twice as long as their inhale. Otherwise, they wouldn't stay in that state of sleep. I talk about how you wouldn't be able to stop and take a nap if a pack of hungry wolves are chasing you. You'd never be able to stop and relax. Even if you had the most comfortable bed and in the darkest environment, you cannot fall asleep. You have to shift into that parasympathetic state. One of the best ways to do it is to control your breathing. So exhale twice as long as inhale. That's one of the simple seven. Breathe in, count to 7 when you're breathing in, count to 14 to exhale. You do 10 of those, especially at night, especially for those of our listeners and viewers who are having trouble with insomnia. Well, it's because their body has stayed in sympathetic overdrive all day and multiple days. You know, imagine if I was someone who, let's say I have to sit through rush hour traffic to get to work, and usually I'm late because of traffic. And when I get there, my boss yells at me, and he yells at me all day. And then at 5 o'clock when it's quitting time, he dumps a stack of papers in my desk and says, don't leave till you finish this or you're fired. So I stay late an extra 2 hours to get the work done, and I get home, and now my wife is yelling at me saying, you are late again. I had to put the kids to bed by myself or feed them by myself. You missed dinner, whatever. And now you go lie down to go to sleep. And the first thought in your mind is, I'm too tired to fall asleep, which almost is like a irony, like an oxymoron. It's like saying it was raining so hard, I didn't even get wet. If you're too tired, you should be able to fall asleep even faster. But a lot of people say, I'm so tired. Thoughts keep running through my head. Well, you gotta get out of that sympathetic overdrive. Go into parasympathetic, which means slow exhales. Do 10 breaths, count to 7 in, count to 14 out. Before you hit number 10, you'll be out. You'll be asleep. So that's one of the simple seven, is control your breathing. Twice a day, take 10 breaths like that. One simple one is sunlight. You know, serotonin levels in our brain and melatonin levels and vitamin D, a lot of those are light related. Now, we'll talk about melatonin when we talk about sleep, but sunlight, everyone thinks is dangerous for us, but actually there's tons of benefits to sunlight.
Right.
A lot of people who are under stress, one of the things that increases in addition to blood pressure is cholesterol. Because cholesterol is the building block to all the cells in our body. It's also the precursor to hormones like cortisol and testosterone and estrogen and progesterone and testosterone. All these hormones need cholesterol. So does vitamin D. So if your body is in a state of stress, the brain, in its infinite wisdom, will send signals through the nerves to your liver. And it'll say, we need more cholesterol, and it'll produce cholesterol. Now, it won't produce the HDL, which some people incorrectly call the good cholesterol. It'll produce the LDL, which they incorrectly call the bad cholesterol. There's no bad anything that the body produces. Those are building blocks. You look at the biology of a cell, right?
Right.
The cell membrane is made up of the lipid bilayer, which is cholesterol. So if there's anything in your body that needs repair, regeneration, hormones that you need, your body will intentionally increase cholesterol to do that. So sunlight, when it hits your skin, your body will use the light to convert cholesterol into vitamin D.
Right.
How brilliant is that?
That's
and
right.
Vitamin D prevents heart disease. Vitamin D prevents arthritis. Vitamin D prevents, you know, mental issues and depression, and serotonin levels also go up. So I recommend 15 minutes in the sun. You know, what you do out on the grass barefoot, you're getting some sunlight through your eyes. Eyes absorb sunlight. Your skin absorbs sunlight. It's brilliant. It's amazing. You said you do it whether it's snowing or it's sunshine or if it's raining. You go out there. I think it's great. The UV rays still come through. But, you know, you might even recommend vitamin D supplementation to some people who don't live in areas that have a lot of sunlight just to make sure their levels don't dip. You know, another one of the simple seven is visualization. There's a physiologic response to every thought. Right now, you and I can close our eyes and imagine someone really attractive standing in front of us. Our physiologic state will change instantly. Our hormonal state will change instantly. The chemicals in our body will change. And then we can close our eyes and worry.
Right.
And worry about something that hasn't happened. But imagine that it's already happened. The opposite happens. Bad things come, you know, happen. Physiologically, everything changes. So why don't we take 60 seconds once a day and visualize what we really want in life? You know, that 60 seconds, there's another quote, and I don't know who said this one, but he said, the body cannot tell the difference between something that is actually experienced and something that is imagined in vivid detail. Your body won't know the difference. You imagine it and your body thinks it just happened. So go back to your favorite vacation spot, whether you're a mountain person or a beach person. You sit on that beach in your mind's eye with your eyes closed. Don't think about your bills and your problems or anything else. Just focus on the exhilaration of being in the place you want to be with the person you want to be, feeling the sunlight, feeling the sand under your feet or the breeze or hearing the seagulls or the waves crashing in front of you, and really enjoy it for 60 seconds. It's not that hard. And the more you do it, the better you get at it. Athletes do it all the time. They visualize the game they're about to play. Figure skaters rehearse more time in their mind than they do in their body. Because once they fall at a certain part of their routine, they now wired neurologic behavior that makes them fall again and again in that same spot. Just like piano players who make a mistake, they miss one note. Every time they play that song, they're going to try to not miss that same note because it just got wired that way. But when they rehearse in their mind, they do it perfectly in their mind. Mm-hmm. And then their body can do it better. Visualizing is huge. Visualization has showed that everything improves. When we do that, they've done it with business people, with salespeople, with athletes, you know, athletes who play basketball. When they visualize that ball going through the rim before they shoot it, percentage of the ball actually going in increased by 23%. 23% more chance you're not going to miss the shot. What area in your life would you like to improve by 23%?
Exactly.
And what would that have? So visualize. You know, another one is music. Music is so powerful for us. You know, have you ever been at a wedding where a certain song comes on and you saw people that looked like they couldn't even get out of their chair?
Right.
All of a sudden fly out of their chair and start bouncing up and down with their arms in the air. They're screaming and yelling and laughing and they're doing something called a dance and they're having a great time. Well, what was different? A second ago, they looked like they couldn't move. It's the music. I had an aunt named Simi. Aunt Simi was diagnosed with terminal cancer. They said, you have a few weeks to live. And she came over to the house. I was only five, six years old at the time. And when she walked into our house, she played some music. And we didn't know how to respond because we're thinking, oh my goodness, you know, this is bad news. She's probably coming here to mourn with us. But she didn't. She put on some music and started dancing. And she chased me around the living room, made me dance with her and my mom and dad. We were all dancing. And 3.5 minutes later, when the song ended, she said, listen, they told me I only have 6 weeks to live. So I'm going to celebrate. And every single day, I'm going to play that song because that song makes me feel good. I'm going to play that song. I'm going to dance. And when they started chemotherapy and everything else, you know, this is 40 years ago when they were doing chemo and everything, and she lost her hair and she was having trouble having even strength to stand up. Two people would hold her up by her arms and she couldn't move anything to dance. She would just bob her head, but she played that same song and danced to it to the best of her strength. She eventually passed away from cancer, but not for another 10 years. She lived 10 years instead of 6 weeks. And she got her strength back. She got her hair back. She got her energy back. And she felt good. And this cancer went in and out of remission, but she was able to live 10 more years and enjoy. I truly believe it was that song, that one song that did it. We all have that song. You know, if you're a fan of the movie Rocky, play the Rocky theme song once a day when you're starting your day. Just get pumped up and fired up and excited about your day. Why don't you wake up? You know, part of that visualization is affirmations, things we tell ourselves. How about if every morning we woke up, we said, something good's going to happen today. I just know it. I wonder what amazing thing's going to happen today. What's going to come my way? You're going to look for those things. Your brain is going to search for those things. You're going to find it because you're looking for it. But if you're looking for negatives, that's going to happen too. Sleep is another one of the simple seven. How are we sleeping? How we sleep is just as important as how long we sleep. You know, are you drinking coffee with your dinner? Don't do it. It's not it's stimulating your body. You're not going to be able to rest. Now, if you can drink coffee and fall asleep, you have adrenal fatigue. That's when they should call you and ask for some advice on nutrition and how to repair their adrenal glands. And real quick, this might be a good thing to talk about is stress has these stages, you know, and if we were to really simplify the stages of stress, the initial stage of stress is called wired. You're wired. You're alert, right? You can even focus better. So sometimes that's not a bad thing. If you're trying to save people out of a fire, you know, you focus. It's like the mom that runs in the fire and gets the kids out and gets the dog out and runs back and gets the photo albums and bring those out. And then when the fire's out and the fire department's there, she collapses. You know, she was focused. The stress response did it. Now, if you stay in that, your cravings are going to be sugar. That's the person who, if they see a bowl of M&Ms, they can't eat just one. They're going to want all of it because the body's like, we need some high octane fuel, fast burning energy. Now, if you stay in that for several months, now your body requires triglycerides. We talked about cholesterol being a precursor to all these hormones our body needs. So your cravings are going to switch to ice cream and donuts because now you want something sweet and fatty. And then that's the person who goes, I'm too tired to sleep. We call that wired and tired. They're really exhausted. They can't fall asleep. But when you hit that adrenal fatigue, that's the person who can drink coffee at night and still go to bed. They don't wake up. Their cravings are now sugar and the donuts and the ice cream, but now they're craving pretzels and potato chips because their adrenal glands need the minerals. They want salty foods all of a sudden. Now, that's the person who sits in church and they fall asleep. They can't pay attention to the sermon. They sit in a classroom. They fall asleep. They're listening to this podcast and they can't stay awake because even though it's amazing, they can't stay awake. And so anyways, those are kind of the three stages of that. Now, sleep is when we repair. Sleep is when we repair our adrenal glands, refill them with adrenaline, get ready for the next day. We need to be taking care of our sleep as well.
Sleep's a big one. And, you know, unfortunately, cell phones have become a very bad habit for people. You know, they sit on their cell phone and instead of falling asleep, they play a game or respond to text messages or look at Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, and it's killing their sleep. I see it all the time.
Absolutely. I agree with you. You should have a no cell phone time, preferably 2 hours prior to going to bed. Even longer is better. Cool the house couple hours before it's bedtime, then it gets melatonin released. Dim all the lights in the house 2 hours before you're about to go to bed. Again, melatonin gets released. Just like sunlight causes your skin to produce vitamin D, darkness causes your skin to produce melatonin. Right. And you sleep better and deeper.
You know, that's one of I'll be honest. I do stay up some nights studying right here at my desk, looking at this screen, studying different test results or studying different new releases of scientific stuff that's come out. And especially in epigenetics, there's always something coming out. And I'll sit here and then I'll go, it's 11:30. I got to go to sleep. And sure enough, I'll go to my bed and I'll be sitting there till 12:15, 12:30 going, all right. You know, I bought a machine quite a while ago and he was on my podcast. It's called the Huzo. It's H-U for human and S-O for sound. And it's human sound. And you put the headphones on and then it has pads that go on your wrist and your ankles on your acupuncture points. And they vibrate. And that would put me in a deep sleep like that.
Wow.
And it's basically monks chanting and didgeridoos combined so that the frequency reduces the stress response in your body is amazing. And check them out, Huzo.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's the greatest invention I've found. I am one of those guys that wire. I get up in the morning and I go.
Right.
And when I get home, I got to figure out a way to wind down. And the Huzo saved my life, to be honest with you.
Nice.
Before we move on and before we close out today, what's one small change that people can cope better with stress in their lives right now? You mentioned breathing, sleep, but what's one thing that is a priority or something you'd like to leave listeners with before we close out?
I mean, well, I'll give you two things. One is very practical. The other is more of a mental, psychological thing. But the practical part is this. Don't eat when you're worried. Don't eat when you're stressed. Don't eat when you're scared. Don't eat when you're working. Don't eat when you're driving. Just don't eat. Skip the meal if you have to, because that food becomes poison in your body. The best way to eat is to sit down, say a prayer of gratitude, and eat slow. Now, there are times we see thousands of... I don't have a big operation, but we have 10 employees, multiple doctors. You know, we see thousands of patients on a monthly basis. And so there are times where I only have 10 or 15 minutes to eat my lunch. But when I'm sitting down to eat my lunch, I close the computer. I maybe even sometimes put on some classical music to get in the right mindset, because that food needs to be processed properly. I could be eating very nutritious food, but if I'm eating it in a fight or flight state, it's poison anyways. It's right. Not processed. In fact, how you eat is more important than what you eat. Don't eat in your car in rush hour, talking on the phone, yelling at somebody, or trying to do a business deal and stuff in your face. I don't care what you put in your mouth. It's not going to be good for you.
Right.
So if I only have 15 minutes, I eat like I have an hour to eat. But when my time is up, I pack up my food, I put it back in the fridge, and I go back to work, because the little bit that I got in is going to do a whole lot more for me than if I tried to stuff my face and eat really fast to get it all in. So I'd have energy for a day. It doesn't work. So that's the practical one. The other side of it is have some faith. Have some faith. The human body was created with innate wisdom, with innate intelligence. Your body will not do anything to reduce your chance of survival. In fact, everything it's doing is trying to increase your chance of survival. Trust your body and have some faith. And that should give you some peace of mind as well. It's almost like being optimistic, it's going to turn out okay. Because most of the things we worried about turn out okay anyways. Just have some faith. I like to put my faith in God. I like to know and trust and believe that there is a God who created us, who believes in us more than we believe in him, and wants us to be happy, wants us to experience joy, hope, peace, love. So you put those emotions in yourself, walk with those emotions, and you're going to be healthier.
Awesome. Amen. All right. We talked about music a little bit. One question I have for all my guests is, if you have 45 minutes, 30 to 45 minutes to just chill out, what album or artist would you put on to listen to?
Wow. I like worship music.
Okay.
I like Christian worship music. It gets me into a state of realizing that there's tremendous power out there.
Right.
The love. Love is so powerful. Love, gratitude, forgiveness. Part of all of our problems is that we fail to forgive people. And forgiveness should be free, and it should be freely given, just like God gave us that forgiveness. We should be able to give that out. And so that worship music usually puts me into that. I'm a fan of Mercy Me, the band.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
pretty good songs. And so I might put on some Mercy Me and listen to that.
I love the fact that Mercy Me, because when I was, it was about 18 years ago, and I was just found Christ. And that was the year they came out with that song, I Can Only Imagine. And I was a traveling salesman, so I was on the road. And every time that song came down, I had to pull over the car because I would bawl like a baby, and I could not drive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And today, to this day, that song will still do that to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's an amazing song. Yeah, that's a good... I like, you know, in the morning, you know, I that's the first thing I start with is some worship music. And then about 10 o'clock, I go switch to jazz for the rest of the day.
Nice.
And then I, you know, usually end up with... I usually keep it on jazz. Maybe every once in a while, I'll switch it over to some funk, depending on my mood in the afternoon. Or if I want to get a little upbeat, like before a podcast episode, I'll go put some funk on.
Very cool.
Well, thank you so much. I'm truly honored that you came on here today. And please go buy the book. It's The Stress-Proof Life, The Secret to Health, Wellness, and Happiness. And it's an amazing book. I'll put the link in the show notes along with a link to find Dr. Amir. And thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed speaking with you. And I've in the past learned a lot from you and your podcast. So hopefully we created some value.
I appreciate that. Bless you. Much love to you too, man.
Bless you too. Thanks very much.
Thank you for joining in today with the Rebel Health Coach, Tom Underwood. And be sure to subscribe to the show so you can catch all the episodes. With desire and commitment, you can implement a lifestyle of wellness and fitness. For the support, encouragement, and tools you need to be successful, visit tomunderwood.net.